Jaya Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivrajakacharya, Asatara Satyashri Srimad, Isdavan Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopina Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavindama Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Yangamayi Juna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachane. Nirvisesa Samadhari Paskachade Satane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Saragrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. August 8th, 2013, Hilo, Hawaii, via Skype and phone, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikit Save, Text 5. Sadhayitva.
Having executed.
Ajata Shatruho. Of one who has no enemy. Swam Ragyam.
Own kingdom.
Kittavahai.
By the clever Duryodhana and party.
Rittam.
Usurped.
Gatayitva.
Having killed.
Asataha. The unscrupulous. Ragyaha. Of the queens.
Kacha.
Bunch of hair. Sparsha. Roughly handled. Shatta.
Decreased.
Ayushaha. By the duration of life. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The clever Duryodhana and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhishthir, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Duryodhan were killed by him. Others also died, their duration of life having decreased for their rough handling of the hair of Queen Draupadi. Purport. In the glorious days or before the advent of the age of Kali, the The brahmanas, the cows, the women, the children, and the old men were properly given protection. 1. The protection of the brahmanas maintains the institution of varna and ashrama, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life. 2. The protection of cows maintains the most miraculous form of food, that is, milk, for maintaining the finer tissues of the brain for understanding the higher aims of life. 3. The protection of women maintains the chastity of society, by which we can get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. 4. The protection of children gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. Such protection of children begins from the very day of begetting a child by the purificatory process of Garbhadhana Samskar, the beginning of pure life. 5. The protection of the old men gives them a chance to prepare themselves for a better life after death. This complete outlook is based on factors leading to successful humanity as against the civilization of polished cats and dogs. The killing of the above-mentioned innocent creatures is totally forbidden, because even by insulting them, one loses one's duration of life. In the age of Kali, they are not properly protected, and therefore the duration of life of the present generation has shortened considerably. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that when the women become unchaste for want of proper protection, there are unwanted children called Varnasankara. To insult a chaste woman means to bring about disaster in the duration of life. Dushasana, a brother of Duryodhana, insulted Draupadi, an ideal chaste lady, and therefore the miscreants died untimely. These are some of the stringent laws of the Lord mentioned above. Sadha yitva jata shatro swam ragyam kitavarhitam gata yitva sato ragnya kachasparsha kshatayushaha. The clever Duryodhan and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhisthira, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Duryodhan were killed by him. Others also died, their duration of life having decreased for their rough handling of the hair of Queen Draupadi. So here Srila Prabhupada is focusing on kachasparsha, ragna kachasparsha. They touched the queen's hair. So the women were so respected, which to speak of the queen, that even the touching of her hair would cause untimely death for those who so insulted her. And Prabhupada's here talking about protection. So every living entity other than the Supreme Lord feels some need for protection. A lot of the efforts we make in our life are geared towards protection. Yogakshema vahamyaham, yogakshema, nir yogakshema atmavan, Krishna says in 245, and yogakshema vahamyaham in chapter 9. Yogakshema. Yoga is to get things that you need, and kshema is to protect what you have. So here we're looking at shema, protection. So generally, we're all very interested in protection. We have, of course, our clothes protect us from the weather, from insects, from shame and embarrassment. Our residence protects us from the weather, from thieves, from insects, protects us, protects our things. We have our status in society that protects us from the loss of community and family and friends. We take care of how we eat, getting exercise and so forth to protect our health. And if you think about what are our basic, most elemental needs, you'll find that they come down to basic protection. I mean, other than things like air and temperature, for bodily maintenance, we will sacrifice even water and food for an extended time if we're in danger. Right? When you're in danger, when you feel that there's some need for protection, then everything else is forgotten. You can't forget about air and temperature, but everything else is forgotten. And you just think, how can I be protected? Of course, this kind of ultimate protection is protection against annihilation, which is not possible. Nahanyate hanyamane shirire. The soul cannot be annihilated. But when we are identifying with the body and the mind, we feel that the annihilation of the body and the mind will cause the annihilation of the self. Of course, it causes the annihilation of the false self, particular upadis in which we have invested. So this need for protection is there in all of us. It's not only that these five people need protection. Everybody needs protection. And one of the symptoms of surrender is that we find our protection only in Krishna. Nir yoga kshema atmavan. Give up all desires for gain and safety and be established in the self, Krishna says in the second chapter. And later, yoga kshema vaham yaham. I will take care of your yoga and kshema. So that, of course, is on the spiritual platform. But Srila Prabhupada doesn't only preach on the purely spiritual platform, although it's not to say that anything he says is mundane. But Srila Prabhupada also preaches very much on the social platform. A lot of Srila Prabhupada's purports and lectures deal with how to set up society so to facilitate the spiritual. And this is quite an interesting point in and of itself, which could be discussed at great length. Why does Srila Prabhupada, who preaches transcendence very vigorously, Sarvapadi Vinirmuktan Tatpartena Nirmala Rishikesha Rishikena Sevana Bhakti Ruchite, very vigorously, Prabhupada will say, we're not this body, we're not a brahmana, we're not a brahmana or a shudra, we're not a man or a woman, we're not a child or an adult, we're not an old man, we're not a young man, even kal vijja vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hastani suni chai vasapake cha pandita samadarshina. The soul is not a cow or a donkey or a goat or a cockroach. A lot of them are around here. But Prabhupada was mostly preaching on that platform. So then why does he also preach on the social level? It is possible, of course, to attain pure bhakti and transcendence in any social milieu. It better be, because we're not finding right now in Kali Yuga this sort of ideal social society that Srila Prabhupada describes. And Prabhupada makes that point in this very purport. And he says, that's why right now people aren't living very long. You know, the modern idea is that we're living longer. But of course, the Shastra talks about how in previous ages people lived for 1,000 years or 10,000 years or 100,000 years. Of course, even the Bible describes people living up to 1,000 years. So why has it decreased? Why has the duration of life decreased? Because the life isn't being used nicely. Basically, when something's not being used nicely, it's taken away. And particularly the way it's not being used nicely is that those who are supposed to be protected are being harmed. So keeping in mind that this sort of protection Prabhupada's speaking about here is on the material level and on the social level, that he's not talking about something that's directly spiritual. He's talking about things which aid the spiritual, which help the spiritual. They are neither necessary nor sufficient for the spiritual, but they are very helpful. One can become spiritual in any situation. Prahlad Maharaj became a pure devotee in a situation where none of these were protected. In fact, Hiranyakashipu was attempting to harm all of them. Devotees became fully Krishna conscious in a Soviet labor camp. So even if there's no protection on the material level, the society is in chaos, still one can become fully Krishna conscious. So hoitu ki apritiyata. If there's real love for Krishna, it cannot be checked by anything. Everyone understands that real love can't be checked by anything. I give the example all the time of that song, and I heard it in a store a month or so ago. You know, there's no mountain too high, no river too wide to keep me from you. Everybody understands that if it's real love, it doesn't matter what the external situation is at all. However, having said that, it's so favorable for the human society to have a social situation that facilitates bhakti. So keeping that in mind, that real protection is spiritual and that devotional service is not dependent on this material situation, let us go through this list of five that Srila Prabhupada gives, where Srila Prabhupada does have compassion and interest even on the social level. Devotees who think that being a devotee of Krishna means I don't care about taking care of someone's body or mind hasn't really read Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada will say these things are not sufficient. If you save the clothes of a drowning man, you haven't, and not the man, you haven't done anything. But generally, we save the man with the clothes. And you certainly don't remove his clothes. I mean, unless they're very heavy clothes, and they would prevent him, force him to drown. So this compassion, even on the material level, is part of what we are aiming for in society. Alone, by itself, it has no value. Varnashram, protection of people in and of itself, it has value in terms of it'll get you good karma, but even that's not really ultimately valuable. So to push it by itself is not important, or to push it more than pure bhakti is not intelligent. But still we find that Srila Prabhupada is speaking of such things. All right, with that caveat, let's go through this list. Prabhupada says, the protection of brahmanas maintains the institution of varna and ashrama. So this is a particularly interesting statement because in many, many places, Srila Prabhupada says the only persons who can institute and protect varnashram are the kshatriyas. It has to be done by the government. Only the government can institute varnashram and only the government can protect varnashram. So why is Srila Prabhupada saying here that the brahmanas maintain it? Because the brahmanas preach the real truth of varnashram. If the kshatriyas simply set it up and try to protect it because they're more in the mode of passion, they don't really understand the purpose of varnashram, and varnashram will become degraded. So the brahmanas are to give guidance to the society how to become organized, how to have a proper social organization. We could also say, although Prabhupada doesn't mention it here, that the brahmanas are also needed for direct spiritual guidance. Prabhupada says here, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life, so indirect. But it's also, without the brahmanas, people don't get proper direction in life. They don't know where they're going. They don't know how to set up a society. The kshatriyas have to actually set up the society, but only the brahmanas can tell them how to do it. And only the brahmanas can make sure that the kshatriyas are doing it properly over the long run. Now, how are brahmanas protected? Basically, brahmanas are protected by being maintained through charity, by not having to work for someone else. As soon as the intellectuals in society are employed and work for a set salary, then they're compromised. If they're employed by the government, then they're going to want to please the government. They'll lose their ability to guide the government. If they're employed by business, then they're going to want to please business. They won't be able to guide business. Of course, that's the situation today, that the brahmanas, in order to live, they're paid generally by government persons or by business. They're not usually paid by shudras. And because the intellectuals and the priestly class of society today is mostly being given a regular salary. I mean, you're in a position in modern society where, generally speaking, you have to live in a dwelling that's government approved and that has all sorts of utility hookups and so forth that give you regular monthly bills. And because you have regular monthly expenses, therefore, that's a certain baseline. You know, in order to live in most societies today, you're going to have certain baseline expenses that if you don't meet them, your family's out on the street. So therefore, you need to have some set amount of money that you're bringing in every month. Therefore, people are likely to get employment where they have a set amount of money. You know, when you're, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas are all supposed to be independent. Independence means you don't know how much money you're getting every month. The brahmanas are living on charity. I mean, there was a system of
Dakshin. So if you got medical care, if you got astrological care, if you got learning, you would give some donation. I mean, this is also being lost. We see the Indians still do this. We definitely see the Indians largely, not entirely, but the Indians have some idea, as Krishna says in the Gita, that a sacrifice without remuneration to the priests is in the mode of ignorance. But even that is fading among the Indians and among the non-Indians. There's very little concept like that. There, you know, if you're a Brahmana, well, that just means you have to somehow get your money growing on the trees. So this idea of protection for the Brahmanas is a little complex. It means that a Brahmana has to be able to live in a situation where they don't have some baseline monthly expenses. And it also means that the Brahmana has to have a mentality that whatever comes, comes. Because if a Brahmana is demanding a certain amount of money a month, then they can't live on charity. So part of protection of Brahmanas is training Brahmanas how they can live in that mentality. Part of protection of Brahmanas is having ability in society for people to live very simply. I mean, my daughter-in-law's father lives out here in Hawaii. His wife passed away, I guess, about 10 or 11 years ago. And he lives without electricity other than solar, and he lives without plumbing, even though he could certainly afford these things. And he gets his food mostly from the donations of neighbors, and he doesn't cook. He just eats whatever. I mean, he'll eat cooked food, but when he's home, he just offers raw fruits and vegetables to Krishna, and he bathes outside with rainwater and so forth. So his expenses are going to be very low. Therefore, if he doesn't get some money, he can still live. If he gets some money, he can still live. So Brahmanas need to be trained like this, how to live in such a situation where if no money comes in, they can still maintain themselves. That is actually Brahmana. Again, that's a very hard to do in this modern society. Brahmanas are not trained psychologically how to do this. And in addition, the governments do not facilitate a Brahmin living like this. Then in addition, the society has to be trained to give charity to the Brahmanas. So the government has to give charity to the Brahmanas. Generally, in most societies, this is not done. And some, like I know in Hungary, there's a certain percentage of tax money that goes to the churches. And the devotees, I don't know if they still do, but for a while the devotees were getting a certain amount of money every month, or every year rather, I'm not sure actually, from the government. And people could designate on their tax form, I want my 1% to go to this particular church. And if they didn't, then the government would distribute it equally among all of the registered churches. So some governments do this, but in general, this is not done. In general, it's not done. And this makes it very, very hard. Therefore, the Brahmanas also, they have to live, and they are forced into a situation where they have to depend on someone, and then they're compromised. And in that compromised position, they can't guide the society. Number two, Prabhupada talks about the protection of cows. And he says the purpose of cows, the reason cows are protected is they provide milk, which gives the finer tissues of the brain so one can understand higher aims of life. So here it's interesting that in order to understand spirituality, one has to have a properly functioning brain. Now the brain is, I believe, 60 or 70% fat. And therefore the type of fat you eat, the particular chemicals and the particular kind of fat you eat has a direct effect on the development of your brain. Prabhupada would say many, many times that the most important item of the milk is the fat. So of course we isolate the pure fat of the milk in the form of ghee or clarified butter. So the milk is churned to separate, the milk is rather sitting to separate the fat from the skim, and then the fat is removed and churned, and much of the water is taken out in the form of buttermilk, and then is heated so that the remaining proteins and water are removed, and you have pure milk fat in the form of ghee. So by cooking with ghee rather than oil, the particular development of the brain will be along a line that is geared for spiritual realization. So one of the very sad things happening among the different sanghas of devotees is that I'm seeing, practically speaking, now in 2013, it's very rare that you will get food cooked in ghee. I mean, in the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, even though we were very poor, and I mean, we were really very poor. We were, you know, and many of us came from middle class or upper class families even, but we were very poor in the temples. You know, we were collecting just some change and selling back to Godheads. I mean, in the beginning, we weren't even selling big books. We were living then by spiritual sky incense. I mean, we were very poor. And still we cooked with ghee. We didn't cook with oil. We cooked with ghee. We made our own ghee and we cooked with ghee. Of course, when it comes to milk, there's a real question as to whether when they homogenize the milk and they disperse the milk fat throughout the milk, if you still get the same benefits of the milk fat. So there's some people who say you don't. But certainly drinking skim milk isn't very healthy. And we would suppose that the mentality of the cow would also affect the effect, would also affect with an A, the effect with an E, of the milk upon the person drinking it, just like we know the consciousness of the cook. So I'm sure the mentality of the cows and the frightened and scared cows and so forth, but particularly the fat coming from cows, nourishes the human brain. And it nourishes the human brain in such a way that it makes the physiology, makes one's physiology more in the mode of goodness. And therefore one is receptive. And again, although bhakti is not dependent on having a particular physiology, or still, without having this proper brain, it's very difficult. A brain in the mode of passion. We are very much affected by the food that we eat. So how do you protect cows? Well, the first obvious thing is you don't kill them. You let them live out their life and die a natural death. But the protection of cows goes far beyond that. To have a pleasant life, a life of care and love, where they're treated as part of the family. And of course, Krishna himself, the Supreme Lord, demonstrates, as he demonstrates the protection of the brahmanas, so Krishna also demonstrates the protection of cows. Oh, we could go back for a minute to this protection of brahmanas. The son of the king of Kasi, Sudakshana, wanted to kill Krishna because Krishna killed his father in warfare that was instigated by his father. And Sudakshana did austerities for Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva gave him a benediction and he said, if you do such and such yajna, you will produce a demon who will kill anyone you desire except a brahmana or those who defend Brahminical culture. So Sudakshana, hearing this, thought, well, I can kill Krishna, because Krishna, although a kshatriya, accepts worship from the brahmanas. And for a kshatriya, that is improper. A kshatriya should worship the brahmanas. So Sudakshana did not understand Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord. And therefore he released this demon against Dwarka, which again was turned back and destroyed Kashi. Anyway, Krishna certainly gives all respect to the brahmanas, although as God he also receives worship from them. And Krishna takes such nice care of the cows. There's beautiful description in Govinda Lilamrita about how Krishna is squatting down next to the cows with a golden milk pail between his knees, and how he's wetting the teats of the cow and he's milking the cow into the bucket, that the milk is acting somewhat as a mirror reflecting his face, and drops of milk are getting on his shimmering golden, saffron golden dhoti, and the gopis are watching from a distance and seeing how expert Krishna is at milking the cows. And the cows are more happy to be milked by Krishna than to suckle their own calves. And as Krishna is milking the cows, he's leaning against the side of the cow, and his turban is tilted to the side. So Krishna is very much loving the cows. Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna not only embraces Radharani, but he's also embracing the cows and the calves. And Krishna feels great love for his cows, and the cows, we'll read at the end, hopefully, if we have time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talking about being protected by the Lord, just as Krishna's cows. So the third one is protection of women maintains the chastity of society by which we get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. So protection of women. Here, the purpose for protection of women is specifically that we will have good children. And Prabhupada talks a little later on in the purport about Varna Sankar, unwanted children. So according to sociologists, as soon as the number of illegitimate children in society gets to about 17 or 18%, then the whole social fabric of society breaks down. And today in America, 40% of children are born outside of marriage. In 1960, it was 4%. Now it's 40%. And what's really disturbing is that in a lot of cases, these are women planning to have children out of marriage. In fact, it's become quite common in society now to go through measures to produce children not from their biological parents, who will not be raised by their biological parents. Well, this is being done more and more. Of course, all the homosexual so-called marriage, if they want to have children, then those children will be raised utmost by one of their biological parents. And this is becoming not some rare exception. You know, we used to think, perhaps we still think, but we used to think that to be raised by one or both of your non-biological parents was unfortunate. That under the normal conditions of life, a child should be raised by their biological parents. And only due to misfortune would that not occur. The death of one or both parents, or incapacity of them somehow or other, and that there would be a second best arrangement made by others. But more and more today, people are choosing. They're engineering children who will not be raised by their biological parents, and even choosing to raise a child by one parent. Again, this was considered misfortunate. This was if you were raised only by your father, only by your mother, that was considered a sign of misfortune. But today people are intentionally, and the government is sanctioning. Yes, it's fine that a man can have some woman be a surrogate and plan to raise the child alone, and a woman can plan to raise her child alone from the conception. So this is a very strange society. And women are not protected. Women in society are told, before you get married, have sex with as many men as possible and try them out and get into your career, get married later in life after you've had a lot of fun and so forth. And then after you're married, if there's any problem, you know, you just don't like the guy anymore, he's not the perfect prince charming, and none of them are, then find another one and find another one. And we have all these what's called blended families. People are marrying and divorcing and remarrying and divorcing, and they're stepbrothers and ex-stepbrothers and ex-ex-ex-stepbrothers. And because of this, society is crumbling. I mean, it's really strange that we're taking all this now as very normal. Just even 30, 40 years ago, this was not normal. But now it's become very normal. There used to be a very high stigma attached to children born out of a proper marriage. You know, in fact, children born out of marriage were not allowed legally to inherit the property of their parents. Now this has become upside down. We've, in the name of being kind to the children, we've removed all of the social stigma from illegitimacy and from divorce and from homosexuality. And the result of this, of course, is that you have so many children who are not being who are not getting the ideal care, and society is falling apart in terms of illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. So how are women protected? Women are protected that there's early marriage for both men and women, that men and women are married generally in their teens or very early 20s. That way you do not have single men looking for some woman to prey on, nor do you have single woman looking around for a protector. People have their sexual needs and their sexual desires taken care of, and early marriage is done with a lot of care by the elders of society. It's not just some random thing or for money or prestige as it degraded into, but the parents really take into account the wishes and mentality of the children, their horoscopes, the family background, that they really make a great effort to see that the marriages will be compatible. And probably this one purport in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says this lack of care is one of the main causes for so much divorce in the present time. And then there's support for the marriage itself. There's extended family and there's villages. And when there's the inevitable arguments and discord and hurt feelings in a marriage, the rest of the family is there, the rest of the village is there to give support and guidance. People are not isolated on an island. So, and women are treated with such care, they're never harmed. Not some, like Prabhupada says here, you just have the rough handling of a chaste woman. And then your duration of life is decreased. So many places in the Shastra about how the man should treat the woman with affection. Just like he protects his money, he protects his wife. With great care, with great affection, with great cherishing and nourishment. Not that the wife, Prabhupada says, not that the wife becomes a slave to some low-class man. That protection of woman is not slavery. Just like we say we're protecting the cows, that means they're treated with affection. Right? We don't just say, well, we're going to treat the cows any old way. We're going to put them in some miserable situation and milk them with machines and feed them improper food, but we just won't kill them. No, that's not what it means. It means their whole life is a life of care. So the woman is supposed to be the goddess of fortune of the household and treated with great respect by her father, her husband, and her sons. Then for the protection of children, Prabhupada says, gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. You'll notice that in each of these items, Srila Prabhupada's referring, although he's talking about a social system, he's linking the social system to transcendence. So protection of children, what do children do? Well, children is the future society. If you want to know what kind of society you're going to have, you have to look at the children, however the children are being trained. And anyone who wants to have a cultural revolution knows this. You know, the communists, when they took over China, the first thing they wanted to do was change the education of the children. Hitler wanted to change the education of the children. This is a no-brainer. Right? Once Prabhupada says that, we're talking about early marriage, he says it's easier to bend the bamboo when it's green. When it's yellow, it's very difficult. So in the same way with children, Prabhupada said children are like soft dough. They can be molded in any way, you know. But once you bake the dough, then it's hard. You have to break it. To change the character of an adult, to change the paradigms of an adult is very difficult. Actually, a lot of our paradigms are formed before we're 4 years old. Half of our IQ is formed before we're four. And a lot of our views of the world are formed when we're extremely young. Before the age of five, and Prabhupada talks here about the garbhadhan samskar, the mood at conception. Right? Nowadays, children are not protected even in the grossest sense of the term, that they're murdered in the womb. But, of course, even on another level than that, the children today are being harmed. They're at risk of death in the womb. They're at risk of drugs and alcohol taken by the mother. And then they're put into situations where their education is all materialistic. They're exposed to the media. They said by the age of two, a child can recognize brand names and have brand preferences. You know, I want this toothpaste over that toothpaste. And those brand preferences will stay for life. So the children are being trained from a young age through advertisements, through television shows, through movies. Life is all about materialism. There's no God. There's no soul. The only thing to do in life is just to enjoy your senses. So the children are being harmed and propagandized to be materialists from the very beginning of life. So proper protection of children means that they're surrounded with love and spirituality from the moment of conception, that the sexual relation between husband and wife is not just on the basis of bodily desire, which of course has to be there. Without some bodily desire, the sex act is not possible to happen. But not just on the basis of bodily desire, but also on the basis of a harmonious emotional relationship of love between the husband and wife, to surround the child with love, and a sense of love for Krishna. Prabhupada says that married sex is like offering our food. It's a kind of yajna. So we offer our food, yajna shistatina santo, chintay sarvakil bhitai, bhumchitay te tukampamye pachantatvakaranat. So Krishna says this about food. If you eat food that's not offered as sacrifice, so sex also should be offered as a sacrifice for Vishnu, as a sacrifice for Krishna. That Krishna, we give you our bodies, we give you our marital union, we give you our love, and this child that we, any children that are produced, we offer in your service. And then the child is trained that you're not this body, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that the purpose of life is self-realization. They're trained in high character. They're trained in morality. Of course, you cannot, it's another long discussion which we don't at all have time to get into, but we can just say very briefly that attempts in the modern day to train children in character and values without spirituality are doomed to failure. Because without spirituality, one will not maintain one's values in difficult situations. As soon as there's a difficult situation, you will think, as we talked about in the beginning, of my own protection, and therefore one will throw one's values out the window. The fifth thing, the protection of the old men gives them a chance to prepare themselves for a better life after death. So again, here Srila Prabhupada is referring to something transcendent. So what does it mean to protect the old men? It means, again, that they don't have to work, that once you get to an old age, you no longer have to maintain yourself, the society will maintain you, and that you can concentrate your time on spiritual life. So in this regard, most societies do have some sort of protection for the elderly. There is some retirement program in most countries of the world. In America, it's like 62 or 65 years of age. Oh, Prabhupada talks about 50 years of age. And in most countries of the world, again, there's some sort of money given by the government to protect the old people so that if somehow or other they're very poor at the end of life, they can still live. Of course, one way in which the old people were protected in a traditional society was that people married young and had a lot of children. And the children were trained to take care of the elderly members of society. So this goes back to the protection of the children, that part of the training of the children is to take care of the elderly. I was reading how recently in China, the government made a law that the children have to protect their parents, because this concept of protecting the elderly, which was deeply ingrained in Chinese society, is now being forgotten. So the concept, you know, when my mother in her last year of life, she insisted on moving into a nursing home run by a cousin of mine who's a doctor. I volunteered to move into her house and take care of her, but she refused. But it was quite interesting. There were many people in that nursing home who were just abandoned. There was one man even who had 14 children and no one ever came to visit him. So this just abandonment of the old people to who knows what kind of care. So not only should the old people be protected from having to work, but they should also be able to be in situations where they can develop their spirituality. I remember in that old age home where my mother was, when I was with her in her last 3 weeks of life, and I was thinking, you know, if I ever got incapacitated like this, you know, would I be willing to live in a place like this? And I thought, well, if there was Bhagavatam classes being piped over the speaker system and prasadam and kirtan, then it wouldn't be bad at all. Of course, we do have a hospice like that in Vrindavan, but that's only for people who have 6 months or less to live. It's not for people, you know, we also need care for people who are maybe 10, 15, 20 years will have to receive some sort of care that's beyond the ability of some families. But I saw in this regular old age home, the mood was very materialistic. people would come together and just watch television or movies, and particularly inane, I mean, all of television perhaps is inane, but particularly inane television shows, and the entertainment they had, you know, Elvis Presley impersonators. It was horrible. It was just, the whole atmosphere was really more just like we're babysitting these people. But real protection for old people means that there has to be facility where they can take him care of without financial worries, and that old people can be in a spiritually surcharged atmosphere. Of course, doing this not only necessitates training children that they should take care of their elderly, but also training children in austerity. Because in the Vedic system, at least the higher classes, at least the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas, when they became old, they practiced austerity. And they would live in the forest or travel to holy places. And when they got too old to function, then they would simply fast. And this is described in the Bhagavatam, so that they weren't in a compromised situation. And society was set up to facilitate persons living like this. And of course, the vanaprastas, when they're traveling from one holy place to another, certainly they would also be sharing their wisdom with the people in the holy places. They'd be going for their own purification and also to be the guide for the society. So when the old people are being taken care of, although it's not specifically mentioned here, not only are they able to prepare for the life after death, but they're able to take care of others and give their wisdom to others. So protection of brahmanas, of cows, of women, of children, and of old men. And we are trying to set up such a system among our Vaishnava societies, but it's very difficult because the greater society in which we live mitigates against it. It's a society, very exploitive society that takes the weaker members or the more vulnerable members and instead of protecting them, exploits them. As I said in the beginning, of course, even if we're in an exploitive society, we can still become Krishna conscious, because the ultimate protection that we want is from illusion. If we look at all these items, again, of protection, although Srila Prabhupada's definitely speaking socially here, at the same time, he's speaking socially in relation to transcendence. And ultimately, we have to depend on Krishna to protect us. To think that we will set up a society, I mean, look, in that society, which was at the very beginning of Kali Yuga, right before Kali Yuga, when people were basically protected, still Draupadi was not protected. The society could not provide absolute protection. And Draupadi was not protected by the brahmanas, Drona and Kripa. They said nothing when Draupadi was insulted. She was not protected by the Kshatriyas. Dhritarashtra said nothing. In fact, it was a Kshatriya, Dushasan, and Duryodhan who insulted her. She was not protected by her husbands, and she even had five of them. And they were all very good husbands. They weren't, you know, the kind of husbands we find today. They were very good husbands and pure devotees, and they didn't protect her. Nobody protected her except for Krishna. So even if we have a so-called perfect society, even if we had a Varnashram society, still our only protection is Krishna. So I thought I'd read this as a song, the fourth principle of surrender, faith in Krishna's protector, song 3 from Sharanagati of Bhakti Vinod. And it's 10 verses. I'm just going to read the English. Surrendering my soul unto you has lifted me from the burden of false pride. No longer will I try to provide for my own safety. I know that you will give protection to your treasured possessions, O Lord. I now understand the mentality of your treasured cows safely maintained by your side. So here Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although he is very clear that his swarup is that of one of the gopis, one of the Manjari gopis, he's talking about the mood of being one of Krishna's cows. That he has this mood that I'm just like your cow. So going on. When you lead your herds to pasture, O Madhava, on the banks of the Jamuna River, you will call to them by softly playing on your flute. By slaying great demons such as Agasura and Bakasura, you will always provide for protection, O Kana of the cowherd settlement. Fearless and confident of your protection, I will drink the water of the Yamuna. The Kaliya serpent's venom poisoned the Yamuna's waters, yet that poison will be vanquished. You will purify the Yamuna, and by such heroic deeds enhance our faith. You will surely protect me by swallowing the forest fire. Thus you are called Gopala, protector of the cows, and Govinda, pleaser of the cows. In order to curb the malice of Indra, the king of demigods, you will protect me from his torrents of rain, O lifter of the mighty Govardhan Hill. When the four-headed Brahma abducts me, along with your cowherd boyfriends and calves, then also you will surely protect me, O Gokula Hari. Bhaktivinoda is now the property of Gokula, your holy abode. O Keshava, kindly protect him with gentle, loving care. This is such a nice prayer. That Krishna, I'm one of your cows. I'm just one of your cows. I'm your treasured possession, and wherever you go, you will take care of me. When Indra pours torrents of rain, you'll protect me under Govardhan Hill. When Kaliya poisons the Yamuna, you will protect me. I can drink the water of the Yamuna, and you will save me. When Brahma abducts me, you will save me. I am simply your property. So this is such a nice prayer. We all feel in this life so much fear. We feel so much fear for our body, for our mind, for our relationships, maybe for our food and our money, so much fear. Nir yoga kshema atbhavan. Give up all considerations of gain and safety, Krishna says, and take shelter in the self. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. I will protect you. I will take care of you. Does that mean there will be no difficulties? No. Here Bhaktivinoda is talking, how many difficulties is he talking about here? He talks about Agasura, the cowherd boys, the cows, walked into Agasura, Bakasura, Kaliya poisoning the water, the forest fire that surrounded the cows, the rain of Indra, the abduction of Brahma. So there'll be so many difficulties, so many dangers, but always, Krishna, I am simply your cow. I am simply your cow. Prabhupada says the surrendered devotee feels like that, like a sold-out animal, whatever the master does, and you will simply protect me. And when one thinks like this, yatvamam shanti vichiti, shanti, one will have peace. Through all of the fearful things of life, even if one is not protected from the social point of view. So that's why we went a little long today. Might have time for like one question. Okay.
Please remain muted unless you already have a question in the comments. So go ahead, Hermos.
Hare Krishna, Mother Irmoa.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Hare Krishna, very nice class, and please accept my humble obeisances. I just got a quick thing to say. One time I was delivering some cow manure, and I, instead of making like a right, you know, I made like a left, and I went all the way down, and it was kind of like a dead end. And on one side of the road, there was all these cows in a fenced-in area, and then right across the street was a slaughterhouse, you know, and this was just like above here there. And I made a right, and I was going towards the ocean, so... But anyway, what I was thinking, that all these slaughterhouses are making such a hellish situation, you know, an environment and everything, and all these cows, you know, I have cows, and just to see these cows and knowing, you know, me knowing that they're going to be slaughtered, like, right across the street, you know, I mean, doesn't that, like, create just a hellish, you know, environment, I mean, for us to, like, live in? I mean, can you make, like, a comment? And also, too, there's, like, a slaughterhouse right up there close to KTA. There's a slaughterhouse right up there, right, you know, like in the neighborhood, you know?
There was one morning here in Hilo when a cow escaped from a truck bound for the slaughterhouse and was racing down the street. And she ran into the woods, and thankfully she wasn't found. Does this create a hellish environment? Oh, for sure. For sure. But even in this environment, in this ocean of faults, still there's Harinam. And wherever the Bhagavatam is spoken, wherever the holy name of the Lord is chanted, it says wherever there's a Shalagram Shila, that for so many miles around, anyone who dies will go to Vaikuntha. So we are establishing little islands of the spiritual world in this great ocean of Kali. And these islands that we are establishing are volcanic islands. They're active volcanoes. And these active volcanoes of the holy name, of the Bhagavatam, of the worship of the deity, of the association of devotees, are creating holy places. And they are gradually growing and growing and growing. Our little islands are getting bigger and bigger. And eventually they will cover large portions of the ocean. And the ocean of Kali will no longer be very visible. And at least for 10,000 years, Mahaprabhu's movement will be over the earth. So we are in the beginning. We are the people establishing the beachhead against the armies of Kali. When the Allies landed in Normandy, 70% of the soldiers died. But 30% lived and established a beachhead. And eventually the Nazis were routed. So we are in the process of just beginning. Therefore, we may sometimes feel discouraged at the overwhelming situation. But we can counter that. The effect of worshipping the Shalagram Shila, the effect of chanting the holy name, the effect of reciting the Bhagavatam, you know, that's also there. And Krishna is more powerful than Maya. Anybody else?
I couldn't help but wonder, when you were speaking about protection of the elderly, and you mentioned some small facility in Vrindavan for those hospice for those with very little time to live. It seems like we're at a juncture where we, in our society, we really need to start thinking about facility for those of us that are getting older. The first generation, I guess, the average age must be somewhere in the earlier, or at least the middle 60s. And just like in the mundane society, with all the boomy, baby boomers, they're reaching that age where they're going to need facilities soon. So it's becoming big business, and lots of plans are being made, and lots of money will obviously be made. But what's being done in our society to prepare for protection of the elderly devotees?
There are some things. There's a building in Mayapur specifically for elderly brahmacharis who don't have family to take care of them. That's there. There may be something being planned in Tirupati. Maybe something planned in Alachua, I don't know. Certainly we should be doing more because, you know, middle age is 40 to 60. Then old age is 60 to 80. And old age is like starts at 80 or 85. So right now we're dealing with people who are going, you know, starting really old age. And most of them are still functional. It hasn't become yet a real problem for the society except for, you know, this particular person or that particular person. But increasingly there will be more and more of a whole generation. And I don't know. I mean, I'm a member of the Devotee Care Committee, although I haven't been so active in the last year or so. And it's certainly one of the main things that we've talked about is how are we going to set up some systems? Because frankly, if a person gets really old, in many cases, they need more care than a family is able to provide. I mean, not always. Some people stay healthy and fit until the very end. I mean, my mother-in-law was healthy and fit into her very last year of life. She lived to be, I think, 98. But my mother was sick for the last 15 years of her life. And she needed a person who stayed with her and cared for her for 10 years. And then for 1 year, she was in a home. And that's not such an unusual situation. You know, we have very unfortunate stories of devotees who ended up in materialistic old age homes where they're not being given any sort of spiritual care, and even their material care may not be very good. So this is, it's something that's a lot of people know is very needed, but and some efforts have been made, but not certainly not enough. Okay, we could take one more.
Somebody said something? Sounds like a Matsuki voice. There's a question here, I don't understand it. Naimisharanam, do you recognize that word? Let us know about Naimisharanam.
Okay. You want to know about Naimisharanam?
That's what it says, place. Oh, the place is Naimisharanam. Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what that question is, but it's a place in India where the sages were gathering, and that's who's speaking. It's where the Bhagavatam is being spoken that we have in front of us by Sutta Goswami. So let us all try to have this mood that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has of being Krishna's cow, fully under his care and protection. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.